Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
We're seeing really rapid progress with that dry and hot weather for several days last week. Things racing along. We see 82% of the U.S. corn dented by September 10th. That is well ahead of the five-year average of 78%, even further ahead of last year's 75%.
That's USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey.
Moving to full maturity for corn, this week's number is 34%, over a third of the corn fully mature by September 10th, well ahead of the five-year average of 28% and last year's 24%. And then our look at harvest, corn harvest progress on September 10th, 5%. Five-year average is 4%. Last year at this time, 5%. Of course, most of the meaningful progress is in the deep south at this point, Texas, 62% harvested. We also see North Carolina at 49%.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
USDA lowered new crop yields for corn and soybeans in the latest World Agricultural Supply and Demand Report. The average corn yield was revised down 1.3 bushels to 173.8 bushels per acre, and soybeans down 0.8 bushels to 50.1 bushels per acre. However, American Farm Bureau Federation economist Betty Resnick says that didn't lower corn production expectations.
The decrease in yield were expected due to hot and dry conditions throughout the Midwest, but because there was a really big jump in planted acres, that offset the decrease in yields, leading to a bigger estimated production for corn this year. Soybeans are expected to have a lower production as compared to the August report because of that decrease in yield.
Resnick explains how USDA used planted acres to find an increase in corn production.
A lot of that was driven by large increases in Nebraska, Kansas, Missouri, and Minnesota, in addition to other states. Some people were fearing that corn yield was going to be even lower. However, the September report is the first WASDE report of the year to incorporate objective yield estimates, and we're looking at a record number of corn ears per acre, which is exciting, and also kind of buoying those yields despite the poor conditions.
This September report also marks the 50th anniversary of WASDE report, providing valuable information to agriculture.
The WASDE report was actually created after the Great Grain Robbery of 1972, with the first WASDE report coming out in September of 1973, where the Soviet Union was able to buy an immense amount of U.S. wheat at subsidized prices. We sold them that wheat not knowing that they had a massive crop shortfall at the time. So the WASDE report was created in response to that incident. WASDE puts everyone on equal footing and puts all of transparency into the market.
Michael Klimitz, Washington.
The EPA released a draft strategy on herbicide use designed to better protect endangered species. John Walt Boatwright, Director of Government Affairs with the American Farm Bureau, talks about the EPA strategy.
Well, the EPA's herbicide strategy is an attempt to try to bring into compliance their pesticide registration regulations with Endangered Species Act obligations. And that means anytime that they must consider, review, or register a pesticide product, they must factor into the impacts of that product on endangered species and the critical habitats on which those species rely.
The EPA provided a 60-day comment period and recently extended it by 30 days to October 22nd.
The proposal was quite voluminous. There was really in total over 900 pages that comprised the strategy over several different documents. For us, in terms of an industry, to be able to read and digest and craft responses really was going to take too much time. So that's what led American Farm Bureau and other industry groups to formally ask for an extension.
Boatwright says the proposed rule will impact all farmers who use conventional herbicides.
We're encouraging our members and producers around the country to certainly be aware of the proposal and what they're planning, at least initially, to do in regards to pesticide applications and herbicide applications, and to encourage them to be involved with their different industry organizations who may have a role in advocating for the best possible policy.
For more information, go to fb.org. Chad Smith, Washington.
Thanks, Chad. Let's get an update on winter wheat planting. Brad Rippey with USDA.
7% of the winter wheat planted by September 10th. That is equal to the five-year average, just slightly behind last year's 9%. We have four states in the double digits now for winter wheat planting, led by Washington State, 29%. Colorado, number two on planting progress, 19%. 17% of the intended acreage planted in South Dakota and 10% in Idaho. All other states have either not started or are in the single digits.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
World wheat production down 6 million tons this month, no longer a record.
On Tuesday, USDA releasing their latest World Ag Supply Demand Estimates report. Dr. Mark Jackanowski is chairman of USDA's World Ag Outlook Board.
So cuts in several major producing countries. I'm going to talk some about Australia, where it's been dry. We made a 3 million ton cut in that production forecast. Brought Argentina's forecast down based on just an area, new area data from Agmin. Canada's production down as well. It's been dry up there. So this is a reduction based on information from Stat Canada as well as weather analysis that we did down at the World Board. European Union down. That's mainly France and Germany. Offsetting some of those declines is Ukraine, which is looking at record yields, and they've had very good weather, and you'll see that in a few of the other commodities that we talk about as well. So, speaking of Australia, this is just a map of the main growing regions in main wheat growing regions in Australia, and just to note, and you'll see in some of my next slides, it's been dry, especially in Western Australia and Northern New South Wales. Not quite as bad down in the southern part of the country. But when we look at rainfall conditions, this is a rainfall trace for Western Australia. You can see, focus on the green line. That's rainfall to date relative to normal. Conditions started out really pretty good. Had some good rains early in the season, but then it dried out. And we put up 2012 there just as a potential analog year when conditions were also relatively dry this time of the year. New South Wales, another major production region. Conditions not quite as bad. Again, similar pattern. Started out pretty good early in the season and then dried out. Hasn't been quite as dry as Western Australia or as dry as the northern part of New South Wales, where, as you can see there, the rains, they started off slow and then it's been extremely dry since July. So the dry conditions show up also in the NDVI forecast. You can see the just worsening conditions, South Australia, New South Wales, Western Australia especially, conditions just based on the based on the quality of the vegetation from satellite imagery, you can see that the conditions have been deteriorating. So where does that leave us? After three pretty remarkable years of wheat production and strong yields in Australia, we're kind of getting back, reverting a bit to the mean, a little bit below average yields. Right now, we're in a kind of a critical, the wheat is in a critical stage reproduction, so weather is particularly important. So if it continues to be dry, those yields could come down further. But if we get rains going forward, they could improve somewhat. But overall, clearly a big change from where we've been over the past 3 years, and this is fairly consistent with the El Nino weather pattern.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
We're not here to talk about brinksmanship. No one is here interested in a pause in government funding.
Pennsylvania Representative Scott Perry on Tuesday, just outside of the U.S. Capitol.
What we're interested in is taking the Biden boot off the neck of the American people. In the 5 weeks I've been gone, just give you a quick summary, card check rolling out of the Department of Labor. The Department of Justice, of course, continues to prosecute their political enemies while leaving criminals run rampant across our streets. The president disrespected and insulted the people of Hawaii after their houses were burned down. Alejandro Mayorkas is literally daring us to impeach him. He can't be bothered with whatever the law says. The people that I represent, American citizens, are now being forced to compete against workers people coming illegally in the form of hundreds of thousands every single month across our southern border. The people in the city that I represent, the capital city of Harrisburg, are dying from fentanyl this week. And there's not a damn thing being done about it. Not a damn thing being done about it. We're sick of the theater. We're tired of the Washington theater. Go home and tell them anything. Tell them we're working for them and all that stuff. Nothing we're doing is changing their lives. A government that tells you you can't buy the stove you want or drive the car you want is a government of tyranny, and there's no freedom in America. We're not interested in a continuing resolution that continues the policies and the spending of the Biden, Schumer, Pelosi era. And we're not going to vote for it. We didn't vote for it last December, and we're not going to vote for it now. So we're here to tell you the American people are sick of it. They can't afford their electricity bill. They can't afford the gas bill, and they damn sure can't afford the grocery bill.
Now, the Freedom Caucus members are prepared to allow the government to shut down. Mike Lee is a senator from Utah.
We're $33 trillion in debt for one reason. We're doing it wrong. This is how we do it. This is how we spend in Washington. We tie every single spending item to every other spending item, and then members of Congress are told, you've got to pass all of it in order to get any of it. You want to fund the troops, you want to fund Social Security, you want to fund this, that, or the other, then you have to fund everything else in between with no opportunity for individual input. So this comes about usually as we approach the end of a spending period, as we now are. On September 30th, we'll run out of money at midnight. At some point in the days leading up to that, typically what will happen is this. Small handful of appropriators will write something up with a push from the law firm of Schumer, McConnell, McCarthy, and Jeffries. And it'll materialize. Just shazam, here you go. From out of nowhere, here it is. Usually there's just a few hours to go. You've got to pass this thing. And if you don't, there'll be a shutdown. If there's a shutdown, we will blame you for that. But hey, vote how you want. You will have no opportunity to amend this. You will have no opportunity to read it, to understand what's in it, to share it with your constituents, to object to it, to improve it, to cut it. Nothing. So the law firm of Schumer, McConnell, McCarthy, and Jeffries keeps changing the law firm. It keeps running the bills. And what happens is almost every member of Congress is cut out of that process. And what that means is that the hundreds of millions of people that most members of Congress represent are in turn cut out of the process. This process will continue. And its deadly deficit and debt ushering consequences will continue to devastate America until it no longer works. But it will work as long as members vote for this. Yeah. It's time for the American people to expect more. It's time to expect an actual process and for members of Congress to have a say.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
This does represent the second highest corn production on record, behind only 2016.
Lance Honig is chief of USDA's National Ag Statistics Service with highlights from the recent crop production report.
In fact, if you look at this graphic, you'll see 3 years at 15.1, right? So we're just separating hairs between some of these larger crops, but second highest corn production on record. Next, we'll take a quick look at how this production forecast compares with what those pre-published industry expectations were. The way this graphic is laid out, each of those blue dots represents an individual industry member's published expectation of what they thought the corn production would be. The red block represents the NAS forecast. So you can see up toward the top end of what folks were expecting. And based on looking at those expectations, there were yields and productions. They didn't capture the acreage increase. We're much closer in line with what the yield expectations were, but they didn't see the acreage increase coming, at least with these folks.
And for soybeans.
Looking at soybean production, seventh highest production on record is what we're expecting at this point. And the top six are on this chart as well. So we're still looking at another good-sized soybean crop. Comparing soybean production with the published expectations, not really much of a surprise here. You can see pretty much right in the middle of those expectations.
Now, the crop production report covers all of the major crops, including cotton, which is turned.
Conditions just continuing to decline, particularly in Texas. Things are really tough down there. In fact, if you look specifically at Texas as of September 3rd, 11% rated good to excellent. So it's not good. Georgia, our second largest state, 59%. So to kind of put some perspective on the difference in conditions across the region.
There's a bullishness in the NASS report for cotton.
10.2 million acres planted. That's down 7.7% or over 850,000 acres from what we estimated back in June. A big chunk of that reduction coming in Texas. Quite a few less acres planted than we had thought. 25.6% below what was planted last year. But looking at harvested area, 8.02 million acres. It's down 7% from what we had previously forecast, but it's still up 9.8%. So as bad as things are in Texas, they look much better than they did last year when abandonment was at nearly historic levels. Right now, things looking at least better than what we saw last year. From a yield perspective, 786 pounds per acre, up slightly from last month, but still off fairly sharply from last year. But with all that abandonment last year, yields were actually very good because we abandoned all the poor acres. And so that 17% decline is coming off a very high yield last year. So overall production there, 13.1 million bales. That's down 6% from last month, 9% below last season. Here again, you can see that big drop in planted area year over year. But actually up on the harvested area, so far less abandonment expected this year than what we saw last season. And here you can see that big drop in the yield, again, coming off a record high yield last year, but well below trend expected this season. In fact, that's the lowest yield since 2015.
Again, Lance Honig with the National Ag Statistics Service on the most recent crop production report. It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
We raised the Brazil production forecast by 500,000 bales. That is based on Conabi data.
Dr. Mark Jekinowski is chairman of USDA's World Ag Outlook Board.
That harvest is about 70% complete at this point, so they're looking at a big crop for the current harvest. Moving into the new marketing year. So this is for the United States. This is the crop that's currently being harvested. So you got some harvest in both the old crop year and the new crop year. But clearly we incorporated the new data from NASS for the United States. And then rest of the changes, relatively small. India production down, lowered by 500,000 bales. That reflects a relatively dry August and a weak monsoon that is likely to impact yields and production there. African franc zone, we also reduced by about 400,000 bales, and that's also based on kind of authoritative data from that region, and it just suggests that it's mainly it's an area reduction, so planting did not reach expectations in the franc zone. And just worth noting, with the cut in production in the United States today, that would drop the U.S. to the fourth largest global cotton production below Brazil. So China, India, Brazil, United States would be the new ranking if this holds true. All right. So in terms of the global cotton balance sheet, a few changes here worth noting. Beginning stocks, we adjusted lower, basically reflecting some historic changes in our consumption estimates, especially for China and Turkey. So raised our consumption back year's consumption estimates for both China and Turkey, tightening up stocks a bit there. But as we look forward into the new crop year, we lowered our consumption forecast by 1.1 million bales, mainly they're reflecting lower consumption in India, Bangladesh, and Vietnam. Trade down, and that mainly reflects lower imports by especially Bangladesh and Vietnam. And ending stocks tightening up a bit, that is mainly tighter stocks in China, as you can see there. China accounts for the bulk of that tightening of ending stocks. U.S. balance sheet, again, incorporating the information from NASS this morning, fairly steep production cut for the U.S. In terms of cotton production, offset a little bit by higher beginning stocks. We made some adjustments to ending stocks based mainly on the NAS cotton stocks data and AMS warehouse data. So that showed that our ending stocks were up a bit from the old crop year, were higher than we expected. So that carries forward into the new crop year, higher beginning stocks, which don't quite offset the reduction in production. So that reduction in production still tightens up supplies by about 310 million bales. And that is going to come mainly out of exports, lower supplies, and then a little bit out of ending stocks as well. And with those, tighter ending stocks, we raised our season average market price by a penny a pound. So it's now at 80 cents a pound. That's down 2 cents year over year.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
I'm a firm believer in economic freedom, but it has long been recognized that not all trade with trading partners is the same.
Former Ambassador to the UN Nikki Haley at an event on China, sponsored by the American Enterprise Institute.
The father of capitalism, Adam Smith, wrote in The Wealth of Nations that Great Britain's interest in preserving naval supremacy was more important than free trade in the maritime sector. Defense, he wrote, is of much more importance than opulence. The challenge today is that national security is affected by almost every part of our relationship with China. No one understands that better than the Chinese. They have desperately pursued American investment and innovation precisely to strengthen their military. American companies are banned from selling military hardware and services to China, but they still sell billions of dollars worth of goods to the Chinese market. We must look at these sales through a national security lens. Much of its military application simply slips through the cracks of U.S. law. But Chinese law requires U.S. companies to transfer technology to Chinese companies as part of the price of doing business on Chinese soil. This cannot continue. U.S. businesses must recognize the threats to themselves and to our American security. Beijing's focus on military fusion demands it. China already steals up to $600 billion of American intellectual property every year. Our loss is the Chinese military's gain. Advanced technology is especially important. Right now, our federal government keeps a detailed list of the most sensitive technologies that are dangerous to export. But it's not a blacklist. We still let companies send this tech to China. They just have to file the right application. It happens all the time. In 2022, the Biden administration approved 70% of licenses for exporting controlled technology to China. Think about that. We must end the export of sensitive technology to China, full stop. And we must keep China away from our biggest breakthroughs and cutting-edge companies. We know Beijing wants to beat America in artificial intelligence, quantum computing, and a host of other advanced technologies. We also know that American innovation is still the best in the world. The Communist Party knows that too. Their approach is basically, if you can't beat them, then buy them or steal it. We should block any Chinese purchase of an American company specializing in advanced technology. No more exports and no more acquisitions, period. For that matter, we should have no more investments that undermine America. China can't buy certain technologies from American companies. But Americans can still invest in Chinese companies developing those same technologies. Talk about a loophole. It's a massive one. By one estimate, U.S. portfolio investment in China rose $800 billion between 2017 and 2020 alone.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
There are a number of USDA emergency payment programs for which payments have yet to be made to farmers. However,
you should begin to see a number of payments coming out in the next 30 to 60 days.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack telling visiting National Farmers Union members in Washington Monday to expect emergency relief program payments to go out very soon.
We are focused on trying to get the ERP Phase 2 payments out this month.
Another program still in the works is the Pandemic Assistance Revenue Program.
We expect and anticipate the pandemic assistance payments, which were for folks who suffered losses in 2020. Those payments we expect will be the latter part of this month or the first part of October. And then there is the 2022 emergency relief program payments. Application and openings will occur sometime in October.
And for the dairy producers, USDA has just opened the application process for the Milk Loss Assistance Program. Gary Crawford, Washington.